Please be seated. In the life of ministry, which isn't much different from the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church, ministers find themselves doing things that we enjoy and sometimes doing things that we would much rather not do. And I'm often asked, what is it that I enjoy doing most? And in the course of that conversation, someone will say to me, well, surely you must enjoy doing weddings. To which my immediate response is to say, give me a funeral any day. Weddings are a high-stress celebration. My job as a priest is to try to calm down the bride and groom, calm down the mothers of the bride and the groom, and simply make people feel a little more at ease, and so my attention is always distracted. But the celebration itself of the wedding is nothing in comparison to the reception that follows. Because every time I go to a reception, wedding reception, I'm reminded of the book of Ecclesiastes, that it says there is nothing new under the sun. I have heard every wedding story you could possibly think of, every wedding joke you could think of, more than once, over and over again, you hear these same stories every wedding reception you go to. And as I was thinking about that earlier this week, I couldn't help but think that even weddings, they're not as bad as retirement parties. Anyone who's ever gone to a retirement party, particularly one in which every business person that the person worked with, every friend and relative, wants to get up and say a few words. Good God, we'd be there till the next morning if everyone got to speak. Recently, there was a retirement party for a group in town, and I hope none of you were there or none of you were part of that group. The person who was retiring was a lawyer. Now, lawyers. These are people who know, at least you would think, know how to publicly speak, and know how to speak within certain parameters and certain time limits. Not the case. And so the people organizing this retirement party thought that one of the things they needed to do was to limit the amount of time each person could speak. And you're thinking, lawyers, they can work within time frames. But then they also thought that what they should also do is they gave the master of ceremonies a judge gavel. And so that when 3 minutes were up, they were to bang the gavel, and that would immediately tell the person they were finished. They had to go and sit down. Because if you go to court and the judge bangs the gavel, that's the only time lawyers ever stop talking. And so they started off. The first person got up, and we very clearly became aware of the fact within moments that this guy was not going to stop at 3 minutes. And so 3 minutes came, 3 minutes passed. The master of ceremonies was not banging the gavel. So this guy kept talking. 5 minutes, still talking, still no gavel. And then he began to hear murmuring in the crowd. Murmurs that were saying, everyone talks this long, we're going to be here forever. Why isn't the master of ceremonies banging his gavel? Well, when it got to 15 minutes, someone finally got bold enough to yell out to the master of ceremonies, bang the gavel! At which point he picked the gavel up, raised it above his head, and brought it down with all his force, bang! Right on top of the head of the guy sitting next to him. At which point, this guy began to slide out of his chair, and as he was going into unconsciousness, you could hear him say, hit me again, I can still hear him talking. Now, you may wonder, what in the world does that have to do with the prayer for Christian unity? Well, the theme for this year is justice. And justice is, as we all know, not always easy to attain. Because it sometimes calls us to do and to say things that make us feel uncomfortable, that take us out of our comfort zone, and we really don't want to do that. The master of ceremonies, he knew full well that his responsibility was to keep everyone within the time frame, and he failed at that responsibility. Now, granted, it's not a great justice issue, it's not certainly not a great moral issue that's happening, it's just that rules that were set in place were not being followed by the person who was supposed to oversee them. And one of the things that immediately brings to my mind is the old adage that silence is consent. When we do not respond, we are saying that what's happening is perfectly fine and it can continue to go on. And so the master of ceremonies fell into this trap that says silence is consent. For whatever reason, whether he was afraid to get the person to stop talking, maybe it was his boss, I don't really know. But he didn't do what he was supposed to do in order to stop the wrong that was happening at that moment. And if you listen to the first scripture reading that we heard this morning from the prophet Isaiah, the great prophet Isaiah, who's going through the streets of Jerusalem now, proclaiming injustices that he's identifying within the community of the city. And people are becoming a little concerned about this. And their concern is in the fact that they come to Isaiah and they say to him, if you continue to complain about the king, if you continue to complain about those who lead us, those who are acting unjustly, they're going to act worse. You're just going to make the situation worse than it already is. And I love Isaiah's response to that. I will not keep silent. I will not keep silent for the sake of Jerusalem, for the sake of Zion. Isaiah knew full well that to keep silent was to condone what in fact was happening. And he could not do that. He simply could not stand by and let injustice happen without his saying something to the events that were unfolding before him. Jesus in the gospel, this marvelous story of the wedding feast of Cana, which I'm sure many of us, maybe not all of us, but many of us smile when we hear that story, because you envision this great drunken party that's going on. And people are having a great time. But yet, they've run out of wine. Now, the story, whether we realize it or not, has absolutely nothing to do with wine. The story is about the cultural things that were happening in this day. Hospitality was considered to be the greatest grace and gift that you could extend one to another. And to invite people into your home, invite people to your wedding party, and not have enough food, not enough wine, was considered inhospitable. And so when people would look back on that event, they wouldn't remember what the great ceremony that happened or how beautiful the bride was or how good the food was. The only thing they would ever talk about from that point on was that they ran out of wine. Now, they weren't going to accept responsibility for the ones who drank it all, but they certainly were going to complain about the fact that there was no wine left. And as a result, they would inflict upon this bride and groom shame. They would continue to shame them for the rest of their lives. They would never be able to forget it because they were being identified as someone who did not respond to the cultural dictates of his day, their day, that said, you must be hospitable. And to be hospitable means you have countless amounts of food and wine so that everyone has everything they need. And so Jesus, watching all of this, Jesus, of course, knows what's happening in the minds of the people there. And he says to himself, I'm sure, I can't allow this injustice to happen. And so he turns water into wine. Not because he thought they needed more wine, not because he thought they needed to get drunker, but he did that in order to protect the bride and the groom from the shame that would befall them by running out of wine. He just simply thought that was not acceptable, that kind of response to people who are trying to do the best they can, but yet they fail at what they tried to do. And he did not think it was just or fair that the bride and bridegroom would have this hanging over their heads for the rest of their life. The shame of inhospitality. And so Jesus, just like Isaiah, could not keep silent. He could not allow an injustice to continue to happen without him doing something or saying something to try to rectify that situation. And so when the Christian churches get together this week and they set before us the theme of justice, it says we must pursue that justice always and everywhere. What we're being invited to do on this day is to give voice to the injustice. To not fall into this trap that says silence is consent. When we see an injustice happening, we need to become like Isaiah and speak out. When we see an injustice happening that we can do something about, we need to act like Jesus acted in the gospel today, so that we don't allow the injustice to continue. Now, the Christian churches did not identify any particular injustice in the world that they wanted us to address. I believe the reason they didn't do that is because there are countless injustices happening in our world. And so what this week invites us to, what the scriptures, I believe, invite us to this day, is to recognize that we must give voice to the injustice. We must speak up. We must act when we see injustice unfolding before us, that we can't allow it to continue. We can't allow it to be condoned, and we can't allow silence to give consent. After I thought about that this week, I truly had to, I thought of another story that happened in my life a number of years ago. I've only been here in Kitchener Waterloo for a year and a half. Before I moved here, I was working in Rome. And part of my responsibility was to go around to various churches around the world and to do an assessment of what they're doing. They did not like to see me coming. I was like the vice principal showing up and trying to rectify things that are happening that shouldn't be happening. And so you'd often see the drapes of the windows closed, the lights go off when I'm walking up the driveway. They simply didn't want to see me. But in one case, there was a group of us, six of us, that were asked to go to the country of Bulgaria in order to assess what's happening there. And the Vatican asked us to do something a little different. They wanted us to see whether or not religion was still continuing to be persecuted, whether people were allowed to express their faith publicly and privately as well. And so our job was to go around and try to ascertain whether this was happening, because Bulgaria at that time was applying to come into the European Union, and so the other governments in the Union would have to assess whether or not they wanted to recognize that government, and the Vatican thought it was important for us to find out whether or not faith was continuing to be persecuted or it was allowed to celebrate. And we came to this one small town that was on the border of Bulgaria and Turkey. And we were greeted in the town square by this incredibly large group of people from the village. They were all dressed in their traditional garb and so forth. And they paraded us into the church hall where they had this marvelous meal of traditional Bulgarian food, which isn't all that good. But yogurt and cucumbers, they seem to like that at every meal you ever have. But anyway, we had this incredible meal, and while the meal was going on, they were doing some traditional dances for us, telling stories, singing songs, talking about their lives of faith. And it was an incredible experience to see faith so much alive in a country that had been persecuted for years by the Russian communist government. And so as we were leaving and walking back to the van we were in, this elderly lady came up to me, and it was hard to ascertain her age because she had that weather-beaten, kind of ashen, beaten-down look that so many people seem to have because of the oppression they experienced from the Russians. And she looked up at me and she said, "Please give me a blessing before you go." And so I gave her a blessing, and I prayed that her heart would open to God in her life, that she would continue to be persistent in her prayer and in the proclamation of her faith. And after I finished the blessing, she looked up to me and she raised her finger right in front of my face, this old withered hand, and she says, "You don't know what you're talking about." Well, I could have, I suppose, said thank you and walked on, but that didn't seem appropriate. And so I had to ask her, "Well, what do you mean?" She says, "You asked that God give me the persistence in my prayer. You don't know what persistence in prayer is." And so she began to tell me the story that some 50 years earlier, when the Russians moved in and took over Bulgaria, each village was assigned a Russian figure who would oversee what was happening in that village. And so they were ordered all to gather in the town square the next morning. And so the Russian soldiers ensured that everyone was there, and they all gathered in the town square. And the Russian authority got up on this little stand and began to talk about the glories of communism and how their lives would change for the better as a result of communism. And he said he was there to do two things. One was to bring about the conversion of the people in terms of their acceptance of communism in their life and to live it out wholeheartedly. And the second thing, he was there to destroy the church, that the church could not exist with communism. And this woman said to me that she went home that day, and before she went to bed, in her night prayers, she prayed for two things. She prayed that communism would not take over her country, and she prayed that the church would survive. The next day, she prayed the same prayer. The day after that, the day after that, and the day after that. And then she raised her finger at me again and she says, "It was 50 years before God answered my prayer." 50 years she prayed that same prayer every single day of her life. That she recognized an injustice. She was not going to remain silent. She followed in the footsteps of Isaiah and spoke out against that injustice in her prayer. She was like Jesus and recognized that she could not allow this injustice to happen. And her persistence for 50 years. I have enough trouble, you know, praying for the same thing tomorrow that I prayed for today. But she did this for 50 years. And I couldn't help but think that that's an example of responding to justice, to not be silenced in the face of injustice, to recognize that what we say, what we do, we can confront injustice and not allow it to.